When all is ready, I throw this switch.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Collected Edition, a comic book podcast where we discuss the famous and infamous runs and story arcs throughout the history of comics. I am Paul Matthew Carr, and right over there is Brian Reese.
Hello. Yes, I'm right here. I'm right next to you.
Full disclosure, everybody, we just did a whole bunch of really good jokes that you will never hear because somebody, I'm not going to name names, somebody forgot to hit the record button. Yes.
And we just, because we're so well prepared and, our ability to recreate those is nigh impossible, which is really sad because we were hilarious.
We really were. This was probably the best comedy we've ever done.
We were on point and y'all missed it. All y'all.
And so we're done. We got it all out of our system.
Thank you for stopping by.
But anyway. Today on the program, we are going to be reading a comic. It is called Ambush Bug, and I am so glad that Brian will be leading this discussion.
Yeah, good luck with that.
it's a wonderful, self-aware comic by Keith Giffen, and it might be a fantastic conversation, might not.
Yeah, I mean, who can say? Yeah. Who can say? I feel like I was a little ambushed by my selection.
Nah.
These jokes aren't as good. It's the spur of the moment is gone.
No, it's all going to be good. Don't you worry. Everything will be fine. But first, before we do that, we are going to talk about a wibbly wobbly timey wimey TV show. That's a Doctor Who reference, by the way. Ooh. In case you didn't know that.
I've heard about this this guy called Doctor Who.
Who?
This guy called Doctor Who.
There are many guys and a gal called Doctor Who.
Who?
Exactly. What are we doing? This is the part that should have been not recorded. No, but at the time of this recording, the final episode, or the final, yes, Loki season 2 has just aired. Boy, I'm thrown off now.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so, Loki season 2 has just aired, and probably the final season.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I don't see how this goes anywhere else.
Yeah.
So if you haven't seen it, go watch it, because we're just going to, you know, talk about spoilers and so forth. As I said to you before, Brian, I loved this, but I know you're not a huge fan of time travel. So what did you think?
Well, and as I said before we were recording, I watched this at 1 o'clock this morning. So for whatever that's worth, memory wise, yes, I generally despise time travel. It is known. But this was different, right? I mean, this was different because it actually led somewhere.
When time travel is done well, it can be an amazing way to tell a story.
And there was at least an attempt to inform those of us who can't stand time travel stories to be able to follow along.
Yeah.
Which is one of my biggest, like in comics, time travel stories, it just, you know, it's just wacky. And then it never like leads anywhere because then another writer takes over and an editor takes over, or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And you're just like, the hell's going on?
It's like a snake eating its own tail.
Yeah. This, I actually felt as if I could follow along. Now, some of this is, it's really good writing in this. And the acting is out of this world, right? I mean.
Oh, yeah. Stellar.
Come to Marvel cinematic stuff for the acting. You get some good acting, but that's not why generally we are here to see great performances. In this case, Owen Wilson, Tom Hiddleston, of course, you know, the entire cast, it's well acted.
Yeah, and, Ki Hu Kwan?
Yeah, yes. And I mean, the running Ouroboros joke and the everything about that.
The fact that, so several people on this show, you know, Ouroboros, OB, the character, gets his name because people know his name in the future and they go back in time and give him his name. The same thing with Mobius. At one point towards the end of the show, Loki sees him and says, "Your name is Mobius." And he said, "That's a cool name." So
he gets good
Thank you. I'm trying to do my best, Owen Wilson. But no, it's...
I think we should do an entire podcast just in Owen Wilson's voice.
Wow, that would be fantastic. Anyway, so I just... Everything is a loop in this. And, you know, of course, Ouroboros is the whole idea. The fact that the first episode of the series, of the season one, is called Glorious Purpose. And the last episode is called of season two is called Glorious Purpose.
And the fact that when Loki meets Mobius is the first time they meet and the last time they meet.
Exactly. Yeah. It's
kind of touching.
Yeah. It's incredibly well crafted, this storyline. It's so good.
I had feels during this. I don't usually have a lot of feels during Marvel stuff, but I had real feels.
A lot of that comes down to, you know, the actors, and they sell this. Everyone, every single actor in this, even the side actors, are great.
Yeah.
Really well done. Now, I don't know how familiar you are with Benson and Moorhead. From your silence, I'm going to say you don't know about Benson and Moorhead. So they're the ones who are the showrunners this year. They wrote and directed every episode.
All right.
They're kind of independent filmmakers. It's a couple of guys. They do all. They're kind of like the new Coen brothers, I guess you'd call them. You know, they write and direct their own films.
Okay.
All their stuff is more cosmic horror, time travel kind of stuff. So this is in their wheelhouse. They have movies. There's one movie called Spring. There's called The Endless. Anyway, they're great. They're really low budget, but their films look great because of how they use the camera, and they use craft rather than money. Right. Yeah, that's great. So, yeah. So when they came on as showrunners, I was like, this is already going to be great. I think a lot of this can be credited to them because this is a complicated, you know, interweaving storylines, and it's done so well that at least for me, I watched this. I was not lost in this. It's like, I get this. I get it. There were some times where I was like, I don't know what just happened there, but I'm going to trust that in episode 6, it'll come back. And it did. All I can say is I hope Benson and Moorhead stay on with Marvel, because a steady hand could be used, I think.
Yeah.
Or hands.
Well, and I think they did a good job with the, it was a very contained story. And one of the weird things for me is Loki is one of my very favorite characters in comics.
Okay.
The character development of Loki throughout the decades that they have existed within the Marvel universe is really interesting, that they go from villain to good guy to anti-hero to all of the parts in between. At some point, we really need to do the Journey into Mystery.
Yes, absolutely.
Kieran Gillen's Journey into Mystery.
Or maybe Agents of Asgard.
Part of what I love is, as a person very interested in archetype and interested in stories and an English major and all of whatever, is that at the end of the day, Loki is the god of stories. He's not just, you know, the liar. He's not just, Loki is about the story, that has been investigated. He was one note of early on, of course, but the development that really good writers in the comics have given him or them has been wonderful in terms of building up the sheer complexity of what Loki is, because he's an idea,
yes.
But he's an idea that is also, again, the god of stories. So you have an idea that is in charge of stories, which are ideas. It gets very, I could go on and on and on about what Loki means in mythology, like real mythology, and also within the Marvel universe.
Yeah. So, well, in Norse mythology, Loki, you know, the trickster,
right?
But his job is always to bring about, he, you know, through his actions, he brings about Ragnarok, which ends the world, which begins the world.
Yeah.
In which Loki is born to be the trickster to bring around. So it's a cosmic loop. And this is the real mythology, which now has been translated into the MCU mythology, you know, the Marvel mythology, which is actually pretty fantastic. Even on a smaller note, his characterization by Hiddleston in the MCU, which has been, what, 15, 16 years
gone,
now?
It's gone on a while. I mean, some folks pick their iconic representations, and I still feel like he is one of the very, you know, people will be like, oh, Robert Downey Jr. is perfect as Iron Man or Tony Stark, whatever. I was like, Hiddleston is so perfect. Perfect. It's like the perfect casting.
Yeah, for me, Hiddleston, and you know, I'll go with Chris Evans as Captain America too.
Yeah,
perfect casting. But in the very first Thor movie, you know, that Shakespearean-esque movie from 15 years ago, he talks about he was destined to have a throne. At the end of this series, he gets a throne, just not in the way he thought it was going to be. I think that's brilliant myself.
Yeah, the ending is majestic because it's both majestic and heartbreaking at the same time.
Yeah.
He gets what he always wanted, but during the hero's journey, as it were, he learned that he wanted something else.
Well, yes.
And he sacrifices what he learned that he really wanted, and he gets what he thought he wanted.
Well,
what he realized that he actually wanted.
Exactly. He gets
and
what
he... It's part of me is a little suspicious about the character development in this. And by suspicious, I don't mean I love it. I'm for it. I think it's great. It is not necessarily keeping in what I had envisioned for Loki to be, but that's okay because I can change my mind.
Well, you know, you could always just write it up. This is a variant, not the Loki.
Right. And that's the other thing. People are like, no more Loki. And I was like, and what you just said, it's like people pointed out. He's like, yeah, but there's like 500 variants out there.
Oh, I mean, or if you want to get, I mean, now there's infinite amounts of variants.
And this is a version of Loki that does this.
And I just love the fact that when he creates the new, you know, timelines, the new loom, it becomes Yggdrasil, the world tree.
That's what it looks like. I don't think it can because the world tree is not, the world tree's function is different than what Loki creates.
As far as the imagery and symbolism.
He gets his own world tree.
Exactly. There you go.
And the God of Stories now has full domain over all the stories.
And if you look at it this way, Kang, the Conqueror, created technology to prune and, you know, streamline and make it very mechanical. Mm-hmm. Whereas Loki, the God of Stories, the God of Nature, makes it into a tree that becomes, that is something that can grow and take shape. It's beautiful, Brian.
It's incredibly well done. And I would put this near the top of, you know, the Marvel shows that I've enjoyed. I might put this just under WandaVision. I mean, I love some of the other ones for different reasons. I'm one of the people who loved Ms. Marvel for a lot of reasons. But as far as just impactful and hitting all of my, you know, English major sweet spots, it's right there.
Absolutely. For me, I think this is my current favorite. It has surpassed WandaVision, which I love. I think go into something in a second here, but I think all the Marvel shows, with the possible exception of Secret Invasion.
Ooh, that was a stinker.
There were some good things in it. I will find the good, even in a, you know, I will find the diamond in the mountain of coal. But I think they've had their positives and negatives, but they've all been strong. I can watch 6 episodes and say that was entertaining.
Right.
Doesn't have to shatter my world and, you know, be the greatest thing I've ever seen.
It has to, because nothing will ever be the same again.
Well,
maybe nothing will ever be the same again.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to say something, everybody. I'm going to give praise to mediocrity. It's true. Sometimes, you know, a movie or a TV show can just be okay. It doesn't have to be the greatest thing you've ever seen or the worst thing you've ever seen. Sometimes it can just be, hey, that was fun. And then I will never think of it again. When I was a kid, I used to watch movies and just eat them up and say, I'm just happy to be watching a movie right now. And I don't know. I think we're overly critical about media these days. Sometimes sometimes a movie is just a movie.
But no, I mean, Loki, this was good television.
Yes, but Loki, that being said, this surpasses the mediocrity. This is actually really good, really well-crafted. Like you said, all the characters are well-realized. They all go on actual story arcs.
I have one question, though, and just I'm picking your brain because I don't know, and maybe you don't either. Is this Jonathan Majors is a problematic actor?
Yeah.
What do you think? Do you think that they have used this to officially write off Kang, at least as Jonathan Majors' performance of Kang?
I haven't heard anything official yet. I don't know. I don't take any of that seriously.
Your thoughts are?
My thoughts are this gives them the opportunity to do so.
I didn't mean to bring this up, but I meant this from a plot standpoint, where we know that an actor may or may not be able to revisit the character.
I see this as if they have the option now. They have the option to say, well, Loki rewrote the universe, mm-hmm. or opened up new possibilities, therefore. Because there's one little throwaway line at the very end, in the denouement, denouement at the end, where Mobius opens up a folder and says, oh, it looks like there was an incursion on 616 by Kang, but they took care of it.
Wasn't that the Wasp Man movie? Or not the Wasp yeah. Man?
Yes. Ant-Woman, Ant-Woman and the Wasp Man. Yes.
Ideas here. Wasn't that the Ant-Man? Yeah.
Yes. I think, yes, that was Quantumania, the Ant-Man and the Wasp.
I haven't watched it, but,
That's one of those movies where I said, that was fun. Mm-hmm. And it was not earth-shattering in any way. There are so many people who hate it. And I was like, it was fine. It was fine. Anyway, yes. Yeah, so there was this kind of a throwaway line to Kang was taken care of. And I was just like, oh, are you just going to just dismiss him that easily?
It gives them the opportunity if they so need to.
Right. And there's the rumor is that Jonathan Majors is out and everything Kang was going to do is going to be replaced by Doctor Doom. Okay. Which, okay. If that's the way you want to go with it, fine.
Yeah. I mean, it's about time we have Doctor Doom. I think Kang is a fascinating and very interesting character in the Marvel Universe. I think Doctor Doom is way more interesting.
See, I always, the way, you know, because they've announced the two Avengers films, which is Kang Dynasty and then Secret Wars. Mm. I thought Kang was going to lead everybody through Kang Dynasty. You know, he'll be the big bad. He's defeated. But look, there's someone behind him.
Right.
And then Secret Wars would be Doom because that's what he did in the comics, which is a perfect way to reboot the continuity. And basically, it looks like Avengers Secret Wars is just a way to crisis this into new actors. Anyway, I think they gave themselves the opportunity to do that, to get rid of Kang if they needed to, or specifically Jonathan Majors. But there's so many different variants. I mean, you have two different Lokis now.
Right. Well, and, more than two.
Yeah. Well, actually, in season one, look at all the different Lokis there were. So Jonathan Majors doesn't have to be Kang. You could have other Kangs. Yeah, a whole Kang of worms, you could say.
Hey-o.
How you doing? Just as we're talking, I was thinking about this. There's all this talk now about superhero fatigue. Too many comic book movies and all that.
Yeah, which I have.
Okay. But here's what I was thinking, because I have people in my life who don't give a damn about comic books and or comic book movies.
Mm-hmm.
Like my daughter and several friends. And when I ask them about it, they say, I don't give a damn. You know, whatever. They don't care. There is no fatigue because they have never been involved in this in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
The only people who are fatigued, it seems, are people like you and me and YouTubers and people on TikTok. You know, the people we've been invested in this shit. It's our hobby, as mm-hmm. it were. Mm-hmm. So we get overwhelmed. I don't know. I just look at it as the only people fatigued are the people who want to fatigue themselves.
Yeah, and I have kind of consciously uncoupled myself from some of it. I mean, obviously, I'm watching certain things, but The movies, I'll probably let them pile up a little bit and then maybe spend a weekend catching up again. But for now, I just feel like the films, I don't feel overly compelled to rush out and see right away.
Well, see, actually, I have tickets for later today to go see the Marvels. So,
well, there we are.
Yeah, which I'm perfectly fine with. I'm still invested. And again, I think it's just because of what I just said earlier, which is I have the mindset of I just want to, this makes me happy to watch these films. And if it's just okay, that's okay. I don't get angry when it doesn't meet my expectations. So I don't know. I guess my advice to everybody is just lower your expectations.
But not with Loki, which is great.
Yes, not with Loki. Loki is awesome. Wow, we talked a lot about this.
We did.
Let's see what the actual comic book we're going to talk about this week is going to do.
Yeah. All right.
Okay. I'm building that up. I think we're going to have a lot to talk about. So we're going to go to break, and when we come back, we're going to ambush that bug.
Woohoo!
And we are back. Brian, for some reason, you chose this comic for us to read today. I'm kidding, of course. Just tell us all about it.
All right. According to our friends at dictionary.com, the word meta is defined thusly. As an adjective, it is one pertaining to or noting a story, conversation, character, etc., that consciously references or comments upon its own subject or features, often in the form of parody. A movie about making a movie is just so meta, especially when the actors criticize the acting. Two, pertaining to or noting an abstract, high-level analysis or commentary, especially one that references something of its own type. As a noun, it is a consciously and playfully self-referential story, conversation, etc., or an abstract high-level analysis or commentary, writing a meta to explain the character's motivation. As a verb, it is to analyze or comment on something in a meta way. Did we all get that distinction? Good. Moving on. Meta-commentary and situation has been a common trope in comics for decades, though I was not able to find a full historical timeline of its usage. It has been used as a source of humor and satire, and as a vehicle for sharp criticism of the comics industry. It can also be used in more serious narratives as a way to further a deeper understanding of the medium and to contextualize the relationship between the creator and the created, the reader and the read. This method, of course, was perfected with heartbreaking effect on Grant Morrison's seminal Animal Run. But today, it's the humor and satire portion we get to talk about. When the first Ambush Bug miniseries came out in 1985, I was but a young lad who was on the verge of understanding the nature of the business beyond the "I like the stories and art" stance. I didn't yet have words, theory, or history to contextualize. I hadn't yet read Oscar Wilde's A Modest Proposal. I remember thinking that I was being left out of something bigger, but still got some wah-ha-ha out of it. And now we read it again, lo, these many years later. Ambush Bug was created by Keith Giffen in the early 80s and featured in a few anthologies. Proving to be popular enough, he got a miniseries order and was published in 1985. Giffen did the plotting and art breakdowns, with Robert Lauren Fleming providing the dialogue. It's zany. The origin of Ambush Bug is a bit muddy. Generically, he is a human named Erwin Schwab, that's a nice reference, who inherits a suit sent by some guy named Brum L from the planet Schwab, conveniently enough. The suit bonds with him and becomes part of his identity. There is a very real underlying idea of mental illness and dissociative behavior that informs the character, but this is rarely addressed in a serious manner. It's all about the yucks. The issues we are discussing, the first four-issue miniseries from 1985, are a smorgasbord of gags, visual, and rhetorical. The aforementioned meta idea is at the forefront, particularly in the third issue, which is a long piss take on continuity. This is either hilarious or tedious, depending on one's tolerance. All dads will revel in the never-ending barrage of puns. The work is intentionally disjointed with neck injury-inducing shifts. Giffen gives a masterclass of visuals, intentionally aping the styles and tone of many of his contemporaries. And Fleming takes Giffen's plotting and adds ridiculous, dumb, sharp, funny, and sketchy, very sketchy dialogue to the proceedings. It is shocking that this was actually published and continued to be so. The social satire is extreme in some cases and very much problematic for today's readers. Giffen and Fleming are attempting social and political satire, but some of it clunks badly in modern reading. Overall, Ambush Bug is a fascinating, if flawed, snapshot of the comics industry and the strange world of the mid-80s. I'm not sure if this can be still called a good comic, but is certainly a notable piece of work in the ongoing evaluation of the comics medium. Paul, I perhaps mistakenly recommended this, but here we are. Do you have thoughts, feelings, opinions?
Oh, yeah. First of all, I've been, you know, playing it up for comedic effect, but there's a lot to love about this. But you summed it up perfectly. Some of the jokes don't resonate as well as they did at the time, or if they ever did at the time. now, the big thing I have is because we usually go through story beats and we talk about how the story is developed and so forth. There isn't a story here.
No, there's no story
beat. Like I said before we started not recording and then recording, what I had said was this is going to be kind of like analyzing a Mad Magazine issue.
Right.
Because it's just gag, 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 gag over and over and over again. And some of them, I have to admit, some are still really funny. You can kind of see Giffen, you can see the fun he's having in some of these panels. He's having a great time deconstructing his own work and his contemporaries. There's one bit where he says, if other artists had been commissioned to do this. So what if Kirby had done it? This is a panel that Kirby would have done.
Right.
This is Frank Miller. This is what Frank Miller would have done.
The Frank Miller panel is hilarious.
Exactly. No, so it's great. He's kind of flexing his muscles as, you know, as an artist, doing multiple different styles and like he does cartooning, he does his own style, he's trying to ape other people's style. He's doing, yeah, he does Ditko at one point. I can't say it better than you did. Like, it's a fascinating snapshot of what was going on at the time. I don't know how we're going to analyze it as far as this show is concerned, but let's give it a shot.
Yeah, this is why I was like, as I was reading this, I was like, ooh, wow. I really recommended this. How do I talk about this?
Yeah, I have a sheet of like I keep a notebook as I go through the comic and make little notes here and there. It's just full of question marks. Like, that was funny, but what?
So I think one of the it starts off interestingly enough, you know, and it starts off with you know, what you expect from a big scale comic. It's like these aliens are coming to attack Earth. They're from the planet Tedious, but they're coming for your comics.
They're going to take away all the good ones, you know, the DC ones.
Right. And you're like, okay, well, here's the setup. Nah, no, that's it. It's just one panel.
Yeah, it is. And I love the fact that there's soldiers analyzing this, like watching a screen. Like, I saw the aliens. Like, no, you saw a splash page.
Right.
Yeah, that's not what you saw. And right off the bat, it kind of gets into, I know you're reading a comic book and I'm going to deconstruct and analyze how a comic book is written and made.
Oddly enough, as I say, there's no narrative. The first issue actually does have a semblance of a narrative.
Yes, and there's some feels when Cheeks dies.
Right. Well, we're introduced to, you know, we're introduced to Ambush Bug. Hooray! And, you know, he's running some kind of investigation office. But, of course, he keeps getting calls for pizza. So everybody's trying to order pizza from him. And through a series of events, and this is where Cheeks comes into play. I'm not going to do this with every issue, but this one, I think we can actually like at least start off with a semi-narrative and then we'll go off the rails.
Yeah, this actually has a storyline to it, sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it kind of sets the tone for what Giffen is doing and what his take on the character is. Remember, I have to reiterate, this is 1985, and this is put out by one of the top two comic book publishers in the world. So there's this weird dump truck accident, which sends this stuffed doll flying through Ambush Bug's window. But Ambush Bug, and this is one of the things that I maybe will talk about a lot, is the dissociative behavior and like some underlying aspects of Ambush Bug. But Ambush Bug views this doll as a living thing and makes him his sidekick and calls him Cheeks, the toy wonder.
So, and then this is where you get into, he treats it as a living being, but by calling it the toy wonder, he knows it's not alive.
Right. And so you have, there's a conflict there. I don't want to assign Giffen too much intent, but I feel like there may be a little bit there, not for me to say. But so he takes on the stuffed doll and makes it his sidekick, which leads him to then, he's investigating a crime. There is a group of people who have taken over a warehouse. They're threatening to blow the warehouse up with nerve gas or something or another if they don't get some kind of government regulation.
Or deregulation.
Or deregulation.
Yes.
Now.
Yes, the bombers are Republicans. Really
dated here. Yes, the bombers are Republicans. The and this isn't us putting our own spin on it. They call themselves this is Giffen goes straight into politics.
Yeah,
hardcore on this, which is fascinating at this time because of who is president and what the world is like at this time.
And again, you said earlier you don't want to assign too much intent on this, but this is fairly obvious that Republicans at the time were willing to blow up everything unless they got their way.
But Giffen doesn't let the other side off either.
No, he is an equal opportunity offender.
Where the cops are like wanting them to talk about their feelings and, you know.
Well, at one point, the chief of police says, come out so we can coddle you. It's like, oh, wow. He's just no punches pulled at this point.
I mean, he's equal. He is very equal opportunity. I mean, I think I can see, like, knowing Giffen, not personally, but, you know, knowing his over or whatever. I mean, he definitely leans one side over the other. But he's also known as, he's also very famous as a curmudgeon. So I think his disgust in general is obvious with with his writing, particularly in this. But it's this whole sequence of events. So it's Shades and Spalding are the two terrorists, the Republican terrorists. And there's also like an African-American woman who I don't think was named. I don't remember. It turns out, of course, that they kidnapped they have a hostage, and the hostage is one of the terrorist grandmothers.
Yes, exactly. She was convenient around to. Yeah. To take as a hostage.
Who was, of course, a Democrat and thus subject to like the scorn of the folks, you know, but his grandma, but they're willing to blow up grandma. Into the fray comes Ambush Bug and Cheeks the Toy Wonder.
And it also starts a running gag where before Ambush Bug goes into a situation, he has to stop at a costume shop or a sporting goods area to get a costume for the day. In this particular one, he gets a baseball outfit and a baseball bat.
And to say that some of the it's always like the panel where he's in whatever the costume place is, and it varies, is always, it's just a picture outside of the costume place with word balloons. As the comic goes on, these get a little risque.
Yeah, in this one, the reveal is he gets a baseball uniform. And you just hear him say, yeah, gloves, that sounds good. Yeah, hat, yeah, fine. Out. Chewing tobacco, for sure.
What follows, of course, is a completely bananas, wacky series of events that involve Ambush Bug and the terrorists and then poor Cheeks. Meanwhile, outside, of course, the cops are like, hey, we actually don't have anything to worry about. They put the nerve gas in the wrong building. So we, as the readers, know this, but of course Ambush Bug and the terrorists don't know this. So there's a wacky series of events that lead to one of the terrorists. I forget, is it Spalding or Specs being chased? And I do that with very obvious air quotes by Cheeks.
Yes, he's terrified of the toy wonder until he realizes, wait, it's just a toy. Why am I afraid of this?
But at some point, like, then Cheeks ends up with the actual bomb and blows up.
But there's this one thing where it's
there are gags all over the place.
Yeah, there's Spalding drops the toy wonder off the stairs and ambush Bug. It the way it's drawn, it's like a very Frank Miller-y, like, no.
Right.
You know, and ambush Bug finds his toy with his eye broken out, and he's, yeah, it just has this, you know, it's all shaded like, you know, I'm going to kill these guys.
Right.
Yeah. It was just a toy that got dropped off the stairs. When Giffen is doing that kind of thing, I mean, he's satirizing the dark and gritty storylines right. that were coming up at the time. I mean, that's good stuff.
Also yeah. He's satirizing Sidekicks. He's satirizing like politics. He's satirizing social norms. It's just, I mean, Giffen is sharp. And again, whether we agree with how some of his jokes land, you, Paul, as a well-known purveyor of the dad joke, this entire four issues has to be like Nirvana for you in many ways.
As we all know, the pun is the highest form of humor that you can attain. And this is resting up there on the pinnacle with some of these jokes. Case in point, I absolutely love this panel. It's the bomb goes off, and it's just a whole splash page of the word ding. Yes. However, there's a little box from the letterer. I know this was supposed to say kaboom, but I had to letter it overnight, and I didn't want to wake up my wife. So he didn't want to write kaboom because it would be too loud. So he just wrote ding.
And this is indicative of like this, the entire comic. There are parts of this comic that just amuse me so much, and it's things like this.
Yes, absolutely. When they are, hey, let's just say it's Giffen who's leading this. When he's making fun of the craft of making a comic book and the politics behind making a comic book, mm-hmm. It's so good. You know, I don't want to weigh too heavily on the jokes that don't land. I want to focus on the jokes that do, and most of this does work.
There is I guess we should also address the elephant in the room, as it were, too. Julius Schwartz, the editor for this comic, is a character in the comic as well.
Yes,
and he is used very prominently and to great humor, and obviously signed off on all of this. It should very much be noted, Julius Schwartz, while a giant in the industry in many ways, is problematic in today's world, as we've found out more information about him as a human being. So what I don't want when we refer to the Julius Schwartz bits in this comic, I don't want to ignore the fact that he's a shitty human.
Yes, he is very much a shitty human, but he was the editor at the time, and yeah, and he was the butt of the joke at the time.
He becomes very much a character in the story, in the footnotes and the word balloons, and in various other things too. So I don't want to belittle who we kind of know now of him from his usage in this comic, which is actually kind of funny,
and he does. Giffen, that is, he does kind of point out some of the flaws, although not overtly. I mean, people like Jim Shooter gets a shout out in this series.
Yes, there's a whole great thing coming up with the whole Marvel piss take.
I also want to point out that sometimes the story takes a break to show advertising. You know, it advertises Ambush Bug's new fitness tape.
Ads are great because. Like, what I'm reading is the original scans of the actual comic.
That's what I have, too. So there is real ad. There are real ads intermixed with the fake ads for the comic as well.
And then there are these great, like you said, these great fake ads all over the place. And sometimes I had to stop and be like, real? Not real.
Real. Exactly. Well, there's one that's a complete piss take on the, you know, the little squares that you'd see in old comic books of X-ray specs and everything. It's like, this could be real. I know it's not, but it could be.
I love that bit too, because it's like, what was it? There was a couple of those. I guess we'll talk about them now. There was one where like you get a 50-foot Prodi, and you know, there's a one that that addresses the X-ray specs. It's like we'll allow you to see under people's clothes, and then it's then the next line is, and this, that, or the other, and then the next line is under people's clothes, and then the next line is something else, and it's like, no, seriously, under people's clothes.
Yeah, no, it does. It says underneath their clothes, and it says, you know, their bones. Like, but it is under their clothes. Like, and there's one in this issue that's just Late Night with David Letterman, except it's like a post-apocalyptic. I don't know what it is.
It's let's say a woman of a working girl walking past with David Letterman on her shorts. An ambush bug is wearing a David Letterman Late Night with David Letterman t-shirt?
Yeah, there's Late Night with David Letterman graffiti. There's a poster. There's a trash can that says deposit Late Night with David Letterman. There's a newspaper with Late Night with David Letterman. It doesn't make any sense to me.
No, it has nothing to do with anything. I do want to say, though, one of the things is when we talk about this being Giffen's baby and whatnot, Robert Loren Fleming did actually write the dialogue. So Giffen did the plotting. Robert Loren Fleming is credited with the dialogue. Now, he's known for like his work on Thriller, and I think he did some House of Mystery. So he was a comic writer at the time.
Both of which get parodied, by the way. Thriller and House of Mystery.
So not all of this is strictly straight up Giffen. I think Giffen had a lot to do with it. There's part of me, I don't want to get into the weeds here. I'm not going to try to like dissect whose dialogue is whose dialogue, but there are some gives or there are some tells. But yeah, I mean, remember that we want to give Robert Loren Fleming credit for being the actual, I think they call it, they reference it as, you know, Keith Giffen is plots and pencils, and then Robert Loren Fleming is word balloons.
Yeah, so he can get the credit and or blame for a lot of this as well.
To go back to the end of this first issue, though, it ends with Cheeks getting blown up, and Ambush Bug is very sad. He's having sads. And then my favorite running gag throughout all four issues is Ambush Bug goes back to his office, and Darkseid is sitting in his office.
Right, yeah, so they tease the fact that Darkseid is going to be part, or the big villain of the piece.
He's going to be the big villain. It's just Darkseid sitting around in Ambush Bug's office, and of course, then it's you get the teaser at the bottom, you know, it's like, next issue, The Clash of the Titans, or whatever it is.
Yes, when Titans clash. It does eventually get paid off. Sort of, kind of.
Sort of. Yeah. But we'll get there.
Thus ends issue one, and with it, any semblance of an actual storyline.
Any semblance of an actual storyline. We do get in the next issue a semi-through story interspersed with a whole bunch of wackiness, wherein Ambush Bug has to fight a guy who changed himself into a giant koala.
The koala who walks like a man. Yes.
And it's great, but it starts off with, that's Lois Lane, right? At the beginning?
Yes. Well, is it? Because she turns into Johnny.
Does she turn into? I think that's Lois Lane. Well, whoever it is.
I thought, I read it. Now, this, thus some of the confusion in this. Yeah. I read it as this was the alter ego of Johnny DC.
Ah. Okay.
So this person, because she's opining about Mr. Mitzelplick being spelled differently. Because we're
another great running gag.
Yeah, we're in Earth One, and it was spelled differently than it's spelled in Earth Two.
Yeah.
So she has to get out and fix the continuity. But this is actually, I love this because we're still dealing with continuity gatekeepers, as it were. But even back in 1985, we still had people who were trying to. Well, actually, that's Earth 2, not Earth 1.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that was because by this time, there had been, you know, we're like, how many years? 30 years, 20, at least 20 years, 25 years of, I mean, we could go back further. I mean, but I think, you know, sane people at least try to pick stuff from the 60s. to make sense of continuity going right. forward. The ones who are going back to the 40s and 50s and whatever that, I mean.
Well, Giffen is picking out, Piven is picking out stuff from, yeah, he's picking out stuff from the 50s too, because you have all the, yeah. you know, we'll get into the super pets and eventually.
Yeah, I mean, issue three, I don't even know how to talk about issue three, but we'll try. But yes, I mean, this is, again, he is just poking. But I think, you know, the continuity cops existed in 1985 by you know, it wasn't internet, but it was newsletters and letter pages. Letter pages used to be fun. Remember that?
Yeah. Letter pages where, because again, we're reading the original scans of these comics. The letter pages, people used to post their address.
Yes.
Their real honest to God address.
And in one of these issues, Mark Wade wrote in.
Is it the same Mark Wade?
He was talking about working for Amazing Stories.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And he was on the comp list.
Wow.
Yeah. That's Mark Wade, either right before or right after he started. Yeah.
In old letters pages from the 60s, you'll see a Mr. George Martin.
Yes. George Martin does have. But that's what's great about letter pages.
Yeah.
I think we've talked about letter pages in the past. I think we dedicated a topics to letters pages.
Yeah. We've done so many of these. I remember us. I can't remember what have we talked about on the show and what have we talked about in real life?
I'm writing my intro, sometimes I was like, did I already do satire? Did I already do Oscar Wilde? Did I already do the beats? Yeah. Am I repeating myself? Who knows? Who cares?
I try it.
Who cares?
This is just for us anyway. So we have the continuity police a specific continuity police person.
But then Johnny DC shows up to battle the giant koala because the giant koala doesn't fit into the continuity. So Johnny, and of course, it's not just Johnny. So there's the picture of Johnny DC, but he also uses the DC logo at the time.
Right. I just want to point out that you said the words Johnny DC shows up to fight the giant koala.
And this is why we love comics. Thanks for stopping by, everybody.
Yes.
I mean, it's like, so the koala knocks out Johnny DC and Johnny DC is like left kind of in the rubble.
Yes. Johnny DC, by the way, is just the DC logo right. with a head and arms, like stick yeah. figure arms.
And it's the continuity scold.
Yes.
Which is what Giffen and Fleming are like very opposed to, is the continuity scolds. And so, yeah, but you know, I mean, Triumphant and what have you, and Ambush Bug beats the koala.
Well, I do want to point out, so a man shows up at Ambush Bug's detective agency because he's randomly chosen in a phone book. To the kids out there, there used to be these books with people's phone numbers in them.
Yeah, and addresses.
And addresses. Seriously. People used to just give out their address and phone number to everyone. But he explains to Ambush Bug that there's a scientist who he's working for the cuteness division of the government, and a man has turned himself into a giant koala. And then the caption reads, "Suddenly, incredibly, a gigantic koala paw plunges through the ceiling and pounds the poor janitor putty." To which Ambush Bug replies, "Wow, a gigantic koala paw suddenly, incredibly, plunged through my ceiling and pounded that poor janitor to putty." To which the poor janitor under the koala pair says, "Arg, a gigantic koala paw plunged through the ceiling, suddenly, incredibly, pounding me to putty." It's glorious. It's absolutely funny.
This is what's great about this comic. This is what is so good. And perhaps we should also mention that the janitor, the building where all this is happening is Paddywhack, which is the Pennsylvania Departments of Distribution, Youth, Welfare, Agriculture, and Cuteness.
Yes. And of course, the janitor was working in the cuteness division.
As a person with a little bit of Irish in them, I appreciate the Paddywhack.
It's a little knickknack that they gave out.
Hey-o.
Hey!
So these two issues kind of are—they're all over the place.
Yes,
there are a million jokes we're not even covering because you, our loyal readers, do not want us to spend an hour and a half just reiterating puns.
But there's some good stuff as far as—I
mean, we could do that.
We could.
If the public outcry is strong enough.
I mean, there's some good stuff like Ambush Bug picking out his costume. And there, he apparently had a competition to see what should his costume be. Is it Lucky the Leprechaun? Is it Bjorn Borg? Is it Rod Sterling? You know, just these different looks. And I thought you would be really interested in the 24 rules of collecting comics.
You know, I highlighted that and then I was like, I can't even. I read it, but I can't quote it. But it's very funny. And I'm guilty.
There's a couple I want to point out. Like rule number 7, a comic book is not a toy. Got that? Not a toy! Exclamation point. Just all the really, like the different levels of totally outrageous. That's the best. That's a perfect copy. Outrageous. Almost perfect. Truly awesome. Really bitchin' for sure. And grody. Those are the different comic, you know, different types of quality you can get.
I think my sin here is that while I was amused by it, I felt personally attacked.
Yes, you felt seen.
I felt seen, but not happy seen.
Yes. So anyway, there's some really great stuff in here about how to collect comics. But of course, rule number 23 is do not follow the rules, which I love. So a giant koala bear comes stomping through the city, causing everyone in the city to yell, "Aw, cute."
And then die. And it should be noted at the end of this at the end of this episode, Ambush Bug goes to eat at McDonald's, and who is serving food at McDonald's but Darkseid,
dun dun dun.
Darkseid is working behind the counter at McDonald's. So now we know that the next issue will feature the promised Darkseid Ambush Bug conflict, right? And oh my God, the third issue.
Before we move on to the encyclopedia that is issue 3, one last bit about issue 2. There's a running gag in this that the word meanwhile is used as a caption. It keeps getting done with different lettering. Sometimes it's backwards, sometimes it's sideways, it's split up. It's been used so often that the letterer just wants to do it differently. At one point, the font is really big. And then my favorite part is when someone says, "I need a minute. Can you throw a meanwhile in here?" Anyway, it's just fun stuff. We begin issue 3, which starts with a splash page saying that we need to play the continuity game.
Right. It's a massive, gigantic, absolute. Piss take is the only word I can think of on the concept of continuity.
And it starts out somewhat accurate. So basically, it's a page, two panel pages, each panel highlighting an obscure character from DC lore, where it gives a little bit of a history and then what they're up to now.
Right.
And usually what they're up to now is usually the joke, you know, how they've been done away with.
And as he proceeds through this, all of these different things take on the artwork of different artists and different eras of the DC comics. So he is mimicking. I can't believe DC published this. I really can't believe DC published this. But, you know, it's like, you know, I mean, he's taking on the concept of continuity. He's taking on the crisis on Infinite Earths. He's taking on the multiple Earths. He's taking on all of these various aspects of DC and its history. And at the end of it, he just says, Ambush Bug says, "This is ridiculous."
Yeah, I mean, there's so many. And there's a page that's just, it's done like Archie Comics, I want to say.
Yeah, no, he did art, and that was Binky.
Yes, Binky. Continue. I don't know how to go forward with this.
I don't know how to. He's literally, I think, satirically poking at the representation of Egg Foo and Midget Wonder Woman. Like, he is trying to be like, they are trying to tell us that these are horrible, racist, awful, not just racist, because he had the Midget Wonder Woman and various other, like, what he's trying to do, I'm pretty sure, is to point out how awful these characterizations are.
Yes. Yes. I don't think he has come not to praise these characters, but right, to bury them.
At the same time, he's kind of perpetuating.
That's the thing. Yes.
And it's like, oh, I think I know what you're doing, but oh, that worked in 1985. But again, this is the problem with reading with modern eyes versus reading with older eyes.
Right. What I was saying about the Archie page, you know, it looks like an Archie and it's a kind of funny gag. But then one of the panels is a black character who says, I'm just a token character.
Right.
And saying like, he's clearly pointing out that black representation in comic books has not been fair, let's say.
And problematic,
but in the way that it's done, he's doing it in the problematic way. So
visually, it's like you look at it and you're like, yeah, come on, man. Yeah.
A for effort, but execution.
Almost the entirety of the third issue is, again, like, and he does this, they do this in a variety of manners. One of the most prominent, and again, this is all single panel stuff, sometimes half panel. There is no narrative. There is zero narrative in this. It is just 32 pages of satire, 32 pages of singular one-off satire. Nothing is happening in this comic other than Giffen and Fleming being shit heels, or I'm sorry, to quote Reservation Dog, shit asses. I mean, the list of, so the idea is they're talking about how DC, the continuity gods of DC, have forgotten about or suppressed certain characters that have been uncomfortable or don't work out well in the current DC continuity. They talk about, again, Egg Foo, the midget Wonder Woman, Binky, Super Turtle, Quisp, love Quisp, the Legion of Super Pets like Crypto, Streaky, Super Monkey, Comet, the Green Team, Batmite. I'm just running through the list here. Krill, Inferior Five, Ace the Bat Hound, and Julia Schwartz. I mean, and these are all either really funny panels, or they're really awful pages, and there's not a lot of space in between. They're either really funny or they're kind of ick.
Yes. Or a combination of the both. A combination of the two.
The Green Team one is great because those are the boy millionaires, and there's a great line in there where someone's talking about, it's like, oh, they were canceled. And it's great because they used the word canceled in 1985. They were canceled because they were rich, and they were canceled because then suddenly a lot of other people who weren't these white rich kids, and so the line is, the lotto did them in.
Right, because anybody can be rich now. Can you answer a question? Who is Christopher Van Vliet?
I don't know. I meant to look that up, and I didn't.
I did look it up, and I could not find an answer. There are a lot of Christopher Van Vliets in the world, but I...
Yeah. Sometimes, for the best of whatever knowledge of the comics world I have, there are many things in this comic book that completely flew over my head.
That's what I was saying earlier. I can just sit back and let you explain all these references to me.
I wish I could, and some of them I do, but some of our millions of listeners probably will know these references better than I would. But I think what is interesting of this, and I'm going to get to Mopey here shortly. Do you feel like Geoff Johns and Grant Morrison and a few other the creators in the DC universe do you think they were reading this? Because some of these characters that they're referring to as characters that DC continuity, Johnny DC, she shows up later, that DC is suppressed, have returned.
Batmite in particular.
Yeah. And have been used in very interesting, like there's the whole Super Pets thing. And they're talking about how they were all written off. But I guarantee you Streaky and Crypto and Comet and Ace the Bat Hound have reappeared.
There was a movie last year, an animated movie of the Super Pets with all those characters in it. I don't know about the turtle. But definitely all the others are in there.
Right. Yeah. And so it's very interesting how they brought, like, some of these characters that Giffen is saying DC continuity is suppressed or have wanted to, like, not address. Even Egg Foo returned in Gail Simone's brilliant Secret Six.
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot about that, actually. And the great Gail Simone to do it right.
We should mention this issue does have a pretty good recipe for teriyaki burgers.
Yes. Yeah.
I like it.
But this whole issue is, it's so, this issue took a long time to read. There's a lot of text, all facetious text. This is an issue that just has to be read on its own that we can't really encapsulate because of the amount of text and the amount of referencing and what have you in it. But there were a couple of very interesting things. One of my favorites was when they did the origin of Ambush Bug, and they did it in the manner of Fred Hembeck. Bug interrupts it in the middle. Again, here's your meta. He interrupts it in the middle and, like, is protests it and says, no, you can't have this. But it's all done with, like, Fred Hembeck art.
Exactly. And I love, this is extra meta because it's a father reading the Ambush Bug origin story as a bedtime story to his daughter. Yes. And in the book, Ambush Bug says, no, you can't have that.
Yeah.
So it's a story within a story within a story.
We forget about the, like, I haven't emphasized the meta part of it. All of this is meta. Everything about this is self-referential.
Yes, they're addressing the reader directly.
We can't even, like, how many times the reader is addressed in this, in all of these issues.
From characters addressing the characters addressing the reader, the captions address the reader. There are editorial notes that address the reader. That editorial notes that address the characters who then address the reader.
I mean, there's that great, when they talk about the Inferior Five and they talk about how it failed, and they're like, we didn't have direct sales market. Hey, it was the 60s. We didn't know then that women were any good.
Yeah.
And that's addressed right to the readers.
Exactly. There's so many references though that are in here. Like in the House of Mystery parody page, there's a TV that says Monster Horror Chiller Theater will return. That's a reference to SCTV. So I saw that and I was like, that's obscure. I wonder how many other obscure references I'm just not getting. There must be so many things I'm just not.
There's a million things. And different readers of this, like especially now, would get different things from this. I do want to address one of my favorite things, which is when they refer to the character of Mopey. Like, so this is one of the obscure characters that was... this is a long piece. I don't know if I should read it, but you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to. Oh, sorry. Screw it. I'm going to.
Okay, go for it.
So this is one of the deleted characters from continuity. And I'm going to read it. I don't care. Hi, my name's Mopey. I'm an initiate of the Heavenly Helpmates in a story in Flash number 167, February 1967, okay? Called The Real Origin of the Flash. I revealed that it was really me who sent the lightning bolt into the police lab chemicals, changing Barry Allen into the fastest man alive. Okay, that's great. All right. Mm-hmm. The continuity buffs hate that story. It's not an imaginary tale or a dream sequence or a hoax. It's the truth, and there's not one thing they can do about it. What? They don't know that I made a few side trips on my visit to Earth? I was here for years. Boy, did I have fun. First, I spotted the little space capsule headed for a red sun. I gave it a little push, and it ended up landing on Earth. How about that? Then I spotted this poor little bat flitting around a lamppost. I tossed it into the open window of a mansion. I just felt like it. I didn't stop there either. I booby-trapped Steve Trevor's plane, dropped a meteor shower onto Argo City, was the charter member of the Guardians of the Universe, released a spider in the radioactivity exhibit at the university, gave Rick Jones directions to the Gamma Bomb testing grounds, belted a rocket ship with cosmic rays, and arranged for Xavier to get an educational development grant. Then I did something really nasty. I introduced this young woman to a guy named Shooter. You should see what's become of their baby, Jimmy. How in the hell did DC let that go?
I think this is amazing. I think it's great.
And I apologize for anybody who had to sit through me reading through that. It just, wow.
Yeah, this is gold. I love the fact that even back then they knew people just hated when you screwed with continuity.
Yeah.
You can't do that. That's not what happened. Yeah, it is. We can just change stuff. That's how it works.
That existed, and then Giffen and Fleming just took it further and completely went into Marvel land.
Oh, I know. When I was reading this and it got to that part, that one balloon, I was like, wait a second. Are they allowed to do that? They're not allowed to do that.
They did.
Yes. And then to stick it to Jim Shooter.
Stick it to Jim Shooter in 1985.
Yeah, at the height of his powers. We've had a long discussion of Jim Shooter. Go back to the Magnus Robot Fighter episode. Hear our thoughts about Jim Shooter. And then, on the very next page, there's a real ad for Bill Cosby.
And I, of course, had to stop and be like, now, wait, you know, right. No, this is still, there would be a Bill Cosby.
Oh, yeah, he was still respected back then. Yeah.
What was he advertising? Was it pills?
Oh, man. Yeah, he was advertising sleeping pills.
I just think this issue should be read. I think if you love comics, you should read this issue of Ambush Bug. It will make you laugh. It will make you angry. But as a form of satire and as a form of the meta self-reference, this is one of the great examples, at least when it comes to the humorous aspect. I still stand by Grant Morrison on Animal Man for the other, but wow.
There's also in this a parody of Bizarro World, which I love because Bizarro Ambush Bug is really sophisticated and smart.
But just back to the third issue, at the end of, I feel like we have to say, at the end of this, Johnny DC, the continuity cop, shows up again. She becomes the big bad, right? Because she explains how she did away with all these characters.
Yes.
And then Darkseid shows up and blows her up. So now we know Darkseid will definitely be the big villain in the fourth issue.
Well, hold on. First, it's the next issue is When Titans Clash, which, of course, every next issue is called When Titans Clash. But it has 7 exclamation points with a parenthetical that says, this demanded 7 exclamation points. That this is, we're not doing it justice, even though you read an entire page.
I did, and I apologize to whoever had to sit through that.
No, it's good stuff.
Don't listen to me, look up the panel. It's brilliant.
No, read this entire issue. Just, if nothing else, read this entire issue. Like I said, there's some cringy bits, but at the same time, this is some really damn good satire and excellent parody. And we struggled about how are we going to talk about this issue, but I think this is important. it's a really good issue.
Yeah, no, it is. And for all of its flaws, like you said, there are so many. You have to be prepared to do some reading. It's like reading a Marvel comic where it's wordy as hell. We all know how wordy a Marvel comic can be, but
you're a Marvel hater.
I'm not a Marvel hater. But of course, all this leads up to the fourth issue, and the fourth issue has some fun stuff in it. I think it's less interesting in some ways. There are some really cool things. The meta sort of aspect continues, where they have Robert Lauren Fleming's mom ostensibly narrating the first part of the comic,
which is great.
Very humorous.
Giffen didn't submit one of the pages in time, so it's his nephew that had to do it.
Right, so you get like a
little cartoon
drawing. It brings back this goofy character, Scabbard, who goes on this rampage. Things get a little weird, and yeah. It doesn't really follow. I think they were just trying to finish up a little bit. Scabbard is like marching and stomping around the city. Ambush Bug is somehow having sushi and then going to the library, but then the librarian's telling me can't look at the comics because they're collector's issues. Scabbard fights the Frenchman, who of course is Ambush Bug. But then there's a big giant nuclear cloud at some point that's developed through all of this. And it just has a little arrow pointing at the nuclear cloud and it says Reagan. And I can't lie, I laughed.
Yeah, I did too. I do like the fact that Ambush Bug is eating sushi and says, I don't think this fish is cooked properly.
And then it turns out he's eating an actual fish.
Right.
But then it ends up with what Scabbard is looking to get revenge on some group. I can't remember what it is, but he has an address. This is the pinnacle. This is the very pinnacle of this comic. So his address is, he's looking for the Trinity Building. And yes. Then it turns out the address is 666 Fifth Avenue, which is the address of DC Comics at the time. He's like, oh, wait a minute. I'm in the wrong comic book. And then he just walks off panel.
Yeah. Yeah. He says, I thought I was in an issue of Thriller. So sorry. And he leaves.
And Thriller is the comic being written by Robert Loren Fleming at the time.
Which leads to one of my favorite pages in all of these comics, which is after the villain leaves, it's just empty panels with
word balloons.
With word balloons, the writer and the artist having a conversation. What are we going to do?
And the editor comes in and squabbles with them as well.
We're going to lose everybody. The readers are going to leave if there's nothing going on. And then Ambush Bug has to look in and go, oh, they're still here because we're looking at him.
It's two pages of blank panels. Well, they're not completely blank yet. The word balloons. And like you said, there's Ambush Bug popping up a little bit, but no.
It's... Yeah. Then there's a connect the dots to keep the viewer happy while they come up with a new story.
And then the whole thing ends with this weird hard socks story. Yeah. It's literally about a sock thief and Ambush Bug is trying to save the socks. It is completely, and the socks and the creature inside the socks are drawn in a way that are not even subtle. There's no subtlety here.
Oh, absolutely
this
not.
This is a PG-rated comic put out on the newsstands in which there's a creature stealing socks, and when he's in the socks, it's a schlong. It just is. There's no way around it. They're not even trying. It's like many, 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 many panels of penises in socks.
Come on, Brian. It's an Argyle sock with a pink head.
But this goes back to like the very premise. How did this get published? How is this? Oh, and I should explain at the very end of the comic, Darkseid shows up. Ambush Bug just pulls out like a little pin or something, and then Darkseid just deflates, and so Ambush Bug beats
Darkseid.
Inflatable Darkseid.
Well, I mean, you have to, you know, resemblance to penises aside, the character of Argyle
goes back to the origin story. Yes.
He creates for himself a mask that looks a heck of a lot like Dr. Doom and pronounces, that's my origin, fanboy. Not that it was any of your business.
It's as we've been talking about this, I have talked myself back into loving this comic a lot more than when I started trying to describe it.
I think it's only when you try to overthink it because we're doing a podcast.
Well, and I think what is interesting about it, not to give it too much credence or whatever, but I think in my intro, I did touch briefly. So I touched on meta and I touched on mental illness and dissociative behavior. And with all the hilariousness aside, I think this is a great example of meta in so many ways. I don't know if any comic book has ever been quite this. I mean, there's What The with Irving Forbush. There's a lot of other things out there. But from the big two, as we'll call them, I really haven't seen anything like this. And I'm still astonished that it existed in the world.
The fact that it existed within continuity in order to destroy the continuity.
Right.
You know, that's fascinating in and of itself.
A thing exists to destroy the thing that it is.
Yes. It's mm-hmm. like the Republican Party. Thank you, everybody. I'll be here all week.
at the end of the day, I think people's tastes may vary in how they approach this comic. And I don't want to recommend it as a, how do I want to recommend it? Do I want to recommend it? I think it is worth reading.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
I think that Keith Giffen has done incredible work in his career. And this was meant to be like a tribute to Keith Giffen in some ways, even though we talked about it last in the last podcast. But I think that he had his sense of humor was razor sharp and not easily understood. But the respect that he had from the comics industry in general, and I think that he enjoyed until the end of his life, shows how a comic book like this can get made and how it can get published and how it can still live in some ways in our consciousness. And like I said, not every joke hits, but the ones that hit and hit well are amazing. And
There's a whole bit where he describes how to create an action scene.
Oh yeah, that's a great sequence. Yeah.
And it's just like how you draw the page, you have 12 panels, you could have gutters in the panels. He's describing it accurately, how he would create an action scene. But it's the two people fighting, Ambush Bug and another character, who are describing what to do as they're fighting.
And it's because he dictated that he needed a fight scene.
Right, yes. So there was an editorial comment saying, we've already gotten halfway through this, you need to have a fight scene. So he describes how to do a fight scene. He deconstructs the fight scene as he's creating the fight scene. And that's brilliant. It really is. And the whole thing falls apart because they fall through the panels into white space. And that's how the fight scene ends. It's, I mean, again, very dated. At the same time, they're still talking about things that are relevant today.
Yeah.
In the industry, in the fan community. If anything, the fan community's gotten...
If anything, some of this is more relevant than ever.
Yes. Maybe not using the same language that we would use today, but the ideas are still there. I never finished that thought on what I thought fandom today was. We'll leave it at that.
Yeah. I mean, fandom is interesting. Creators are interesting. And I think Keith Giffen has been consistently one of the most interesting creators that has existed in comics in some ways. A lot of creators are very defined by their art style or by their writing style or about how they address various things. But I don't think a Grant Morrison could have existed without a Keith Giffen. I'm really sad.
Yeah, I know.
And I know we discussed this a month ago, but I'm still, and it's what he did. And what he meant to comics is so important, even when it works and when it doesn't work. It shows in this comic because he took this satire and he took this sort of very meta satire. And I don't feel when I'm reading it that it's meant as hate. I think it's meant as love filtered through very satirical humor. And, are there better Keith Giffen comics to read? Yeah. Yeah. There's a ton of them. Tons and tons and tons. Is this an interesting view into Keith Giffen and Robert Loren Fleming's minds? Yes, it is as well.
I agree. And you're absolutely right. This does not seem mean-spirited. Because this comic could be done by, say, a Mark Miller, and it would just seem nasty.
It wouldn't have been as good. It
wouldn't have been as good. But this seems, it's all very tongue-in-cheek. It's all very playful. And it's pointing out, don't take yourself so seriously.
Right.
This, keep it light. You could talk about serious issues, but, remember, this is for fun. And I think a lot of creators, we've met, like Grant Morrison, even people like Neil Gaiman, took this stuff to heart, I think. You can kind of tell that after this sort of writing... Comics open up quite a bit, and the creative horizons of what a comic can do.
We had
really grows.
Who were already working, Alan Moore and some others were already working behind changing things. But I think Giffen doesn't get as much credit as he should.
Well, the satirical writers don't
never do. Always, Steve Gerber.
Steve Gerber, exactly.
Howard the Duck is a favorite for you.
Yeah, Man Thing, of course, which is, you know, funny name aside, it's very satirical writing and it's a lot of parody. That's why that comic book is great. But, you know, the dark and gritty, your Frank Millers get all the praise.
Yeah,
I acknowledge his importance. The real, the serious writers get praised and called out more often than the satirical writers.
Right.
And I think that should change because the satirical writers were the ones who kind of opened up the range of storytelling.
Yeah.
You know, so
there we are.
Yeah. This is good stuff. Again, I was playing it up in the beginning about this being a possibly bad comic, and I didn't, you know, it's just hard to talk about because it's not a story.
It's partly a bad comic, but it's also partly a really good.
Well, it's a deconstruction of comics and meta commentary, as you said, which is not easy to talk about. Hopefully we did it justice,
or some justice.
Yeah.
There you go, folks.
Yeah. I thought this was going to be a short discussion, but as it turns out, we've been going for quite a while.
Paul, would you like to tell us what we're going to, what exciting adventure into mystery and action we will be reading next?
We're going to go into another satirical comic of the 90s. It's the late 80s into the 90s. Anyway, I should probably tell you what it is. We're going to be reading Tank Girl. Tank Girl 1, which I believe is the first 12 issues, written by Alan Martin and Jamie Hewlett. Maybe we'll have a little gorillas playing in the background.
I was going to make a gorillas joke.
Okay. Oh, you know, the fans go ape over that sort of thing. So we're going to read Tank Girl. Disclaimer. All right. Disclaimer. I haven't read this in a long time. Let's see if it holds up.
Also, disclaimer, this has it very much has adult themes.
Oh, yes. Very, 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 very adult.
Yeah.
It's kangarooed, you might say.
Hey-o.
Yeah, so next time, Tank Girl. Thanks, Brian. All seriousness, thank you for recommending this because it's a fascinating comic and good discussion.
Good talk.
Good talk. Good times.
Good talk, team.
Okay. Okay. How do we finish this? Yeah. Go to the website, leave a comment, and don't go to X anymore. It's just a dumpster fire. I hardly ever go there anymore. And when I do, I just sort of go, ugh. So maybe Mastodon? You want to do Mastodon?
I don't know. Blue Sky?
Blue Sky.
Yeah, I don't know. Do any of them.
Yeah. Threads? I don't know. We'll figure something out. In the meantime, just go to our website, collectivepodcast.com. Leave comments. I put up all our introductions there too in prose form. So if you don't want to listen to them and you prefer reading, there you go. They're there. Okay. Until next time, keep reading comics.
And be well.
You've been listening to The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast. The Collected Edition is a Daddy-O production. All materials used on the program are copyright their respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended. If you'd like to give us your feedback, the show can be found online at our website, collectededitionpodcast.com, where comments can be left on individual episodes, or send us an email to comments@collectededitionpodcast.com. The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast, is for entertainment purposes